You're live.
My name is Behrouz Shirazi, and I'm the chair of the Computer Science and Engineering Department here at UVA. I'd like to welcome you to this year's Research Experiences for Undergraduates workshop. Actually, this is one of the first workshops we have been having for this program. The RU program has been in existence for about 8 years here at UVA in our department. And over these 8 years, probably over 50 students have been able to take advantage of the program to get involved in research areas such as parallel processing, software development, software design, human robotics, and another field over the years. And many of these students have gone on to graduate programs because of the experiences they have gained being involved in this RU program. And I know that these two of our students who went on to get PhDs who went to this program this year. So yeah, I would say it has been a very successful program in getting undergraduate students excited and involved in research programs. This year we have 3 students here at UVA who are sponsored by this program and 2 students at Ohio University. So this has been a collaborative effort between Ohio University and UVA. And we still have funds to sponsor at least 1, maybe 2 more students in the upcoming fall and spring semesters. So some of you may want to take advantage of that and you may be able to support some of your students as well. The program over the years has been sponsored by National Science Foundation, and I would like to express our thanks to Dr. Harry Hedges, who was the previous RU program manager, as well as the current program manager, Dr. Dragana Berzakovic, who have been very supportive of our program. This year we have had the 3 students here at UVA have been working with Mr. Jeff Markowitz back there, in projects related to parallel processing and multi-threaded systems. And I would like to ask Jeff, who is a faculty research associate in our department, to come up here and introduce the students and go on to the program. Dr. Diane Cook also has been involved in the RU program, and she has been managing the program and working with the students as well. And I would like to express our thanks to both of you. The program has been very good. So, Jeff, could you get the program going?
Good morning, I'm Jeff Markowitz. I'm a faculty research associate here in CSE at UVA. This summer we had 3 REU students, and we're calling the program REU 2000. And the students were supported through the department here, through the National Science Foundation Research Experiences for Undergraduates. The students that we have supported are Chris Forrest. He is a graduating senior from our department, and he is in his second semester of support through this program. And I'm happy to announce that he will enter the CSE UTA graduate program in the fall of 2000.
Yay.
We also have a senior, Bashidi Desai, who has spent the summer working with us, and she will continue to receive support through the program into the fall of 2000. And we have Jeff Dale, who is a senior at Texas Christian University, which is located in Fort Worth, and he will also receive support in the fall of 2000, continuing through this program. What we tried to do was we tried to design the program such that we gave the academic and fundamental base knowledge from classroom instruction, and then we wanted to give them exposure to state-of-the-art programming tools, and then do some applied research with some ongoing research projects that we had going on in the department. The approach that was designed to allow the students to participate in and materially contribute to the overall program. And we believe the students have gained valuable experience through this program and REU 2000. The classroom instruction portion, because this was focused on parallel processing, we wanted to give them some classroom instruction on parallel processing because that's typically not a core course in an undergraduate curriculum. So we required the students to take a parallel processing course taught by Dr. Bob Weems here at CSE UTA, and this provided the basic knowledge that the students needed to participate in the program. program. The course combines theory and hands-on programming exercises, and it will be presented, the coursework will be presented in detail by our REU 2000 Jeff Dale from TCU. We also wanted to give them exposure to state-of-the-art parallel programming tools. And in the department here, in collaboration with Prism Parallel Technologies, we have developed the Parsa software development environment and the Threadman Thread Manager, which the students got exposure to. These are commercial tools, and they're being developed jointly between CSE, UTA, and Prism Parallel Technologies. You can go out to the website. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to give them access to the tools so that they could understand the workings of a commercial software product and the benefits of using software tools rather than doing everything with brute force method. And our REU 2000 student, Ashiti Desai, will be presenting that that portion of the program. And then we had the students do applied research. And this applied research was in collaboration with one of our graduate students who was extending some of the capabilities of Parsa and Threadman. And specifically, he was adding support for distributed cluster computers. And this is a mixture of multi-threading and message passing. And this is a very upcoming and state-of-the-art computer architecture that is being popularized by networks of workstations, networks of SMPs. The Compaq has recently announced a distributed cluster architecture. IBM has their SP3 and so forth. So what the students did was they were validating the distributed cluster computing using Parsa that was developed by the graduate student, Mr. Ken Bupati. And to really ground everything, the students did a performance analysis of distributed cluster computing using Parsa and the work that Mr. Bupati put together. And Chris Forrest, our REU 2000 student, will present that part of the program. So, without further ado, let me introduce Mr. Jeff Dale. He's from Texas Christian University, and he will be presenting the parallel programming classroom instruction portion. Jeff?
Hello, my name is Jeff Dale. I'm from TCU. I'm a senior this year. It's been a privilege working at UTA recently. Had a good time. I'm going to give you a brief overview about the topics we discussed in class. And, some of the first things. The class, met and taught by Professor Bob Williams. We met about 2 hours every week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I listed up here the two books you used to use. Andrew's book, Foundations of Parallel and Distributed Programming. And then we also had an MPI book as an optional resource to give us further background on some parallel applications. The main objective of the class was to give us an experience in the theories and concepts involved with parallel programming. And it also gave us some experience in developing some applications of parallel. Some of the goals that we discussed in the class included developing applications on shared memory applications using P-Brakes, developing parallel applications, distributed memory systems using MPI, and then various topics and concepts involved with parallel processing, including various algorithms, topology, and even some compiler concepts. The class is basically set up into two sections. Each section consists of lectures, note-taking, plus two labs that reinforce all the lectures and one test at the end of each lab. We use the C programming language for all our examples in class and for programs that we wrote for the class. And we use two dual processor machines in Ketchup and Mustard for developing our programs. We begin class by discussing P-threads. It's basically the way we wanted to do, handle parallel processing on shared memory systems. We discussed several scheduling techniques used on shared memory systems. We discussed the interleaving contiguous methods, which are the basic ones where the programmer sets up in the program how the program should handle splitting up the work so that each thread is about almost an equal amount of work between each process. We also discussed dynamic scheduling, which is where the program kind of allocates on its own where each process, how much work each process should have been. We also discussed the PRAM model and some simulation techniques designed to come out of that model. For VR, we're basically looking at ways to have machines that are on distributed systems be able to still work in parallel. And in this concept, we basically just look at different techniques that can be involved in these message passing. And we look at different functions involved in MPI and how to implement them throughout our applications. Our next major topic involves synchronization amongst parallel applications. For shared memory systems, we ended up using concepts such as barriers, locks, and a little on semaphores to make sure that our code, while efficient, also avoided any deadlocks and avoided runtime conflict as well. We're trying to avoid race conditions in our code to ensure that we got the correct answers from our output while also developing efficient parallel algorithms. On our distributed memory systems, we basically look at different forms of message processing and the different blocking techniques associated with MPI. We also went over some of how to place and analyze algorithms. We're looking for to obtain speed up from all the programs we built in parallel, but we also wanted to make sure these programs were efficient. Our goal was to try to make sure that we efficiently use all processors involved in our algorithms. In this part portion of the class, we also did some comparisons on various algorithms and compared them between their sequential versions and their versions in parallel. Once we began the second portion of the class, we started talking about various topologies involved in parallel processing. Some of the topologies we talked about included the linear arrays, hypertubes, meshes, and chloride. With these, we talked about various concepts such as the bisection width, the diameter, automorphisms, and how to apply these and how to trace through them in parallel. We discussed various interconnections amongst these different topologies and such concepts as advanced network, butterfly technique, shuffle exchange, perfect matching. We just kind of step through them in class, and we also have a lab that we did problems involved with them, seeing how various ways different machines communicate with each other across these networks. We then started talking about various problems that can be handled in parallel. We talked about various numerical problems. Some examples of it included elimination techniques, using techniques such as the Gaussian, the ALU method, or the Hausdorff method. We also looked at numerical problems involved with iterative methods and using sparse matrices. We also looked at communication problems. For these problems, we used algorithms that try to solve matrix multiplication and matrix transpose. And we were looking for ways to solve these algorithms on distributed machines in parallel. So we basically looked at different techniques on different topologies on those two types of problems. We did some sorting examples also in parallel. Some sorts that we worked on included sorting linear arrays, using the Mitonic merge sort, and also sorting on meshes in different ways in the back situation. We discussed a little parallel enumeration. As you can see, some of the topics we went over included permutations and combinations, lexicographic ordering, some numbering, and some ranking and unranking concepts and techniques that can also be applied in parallel. And at the end of the class, we also went over different ways to parallelize compilers, and we went over some data dependency concepts and place compilers into their code generation. We even went over a little parallel programming in Fortran. We discussed the title, and we went over a little bit on the OpenMP, which is something that we'll be featuring this year. For the class, we had four labs. The first lab involved taking the sequential program and converting it into parallel using PFIX. After we converted it, we're supposed to make the parallel program work with two threads, and after that, we compared our program with the original program, looking for speed up to be obtained and make sure we're efficiently using our two threads. We also could gain experience by using iterating contiguous scheduling methods we did this class. Lab number two involved using MPI. We were getting program that was a cache client server that already implemented MPI. And our goal was to turn that program into a more efficient program. The original program involved an even number of processors, half the processors acted as clients, half of them acted as servers. Our program was to use only half the amount of the original, half the number of processors used in the original program, but each processor would each act as a server and as a client. Thereby, we would be more efficiently using each processor, while also obtaining the speed up. So this lab gave us some experience of playing with some efficient interactive. Labs 3 and 4 kind of went along with each other. Basic goal of it was to make a parallel version of a program that used loops technique to determine the bisection width of an undirected graph. For lab 3, we used p-threads, and our goal was to go two threads and solve this problem. Lab 4 had used MPI and is designed to use multiple processors on different machines. The big thing about these two labs was involved dynamic process creation, in which we had to set it up so that the process could determine on its own when it needs to pass information onto another thread to help solve the problem in a more efficient manner. So overall, from the class, it basically gave us a hands-on experience with parallel programming and different techniques and concepts involved with it. We basically learned how to hand-code all these programs. And all the code that was available in the standard C functions. The class basically laid building blocks for us for all the future research that we're going to do with us. And now I'm going to should be decide how to develop where you're going to.
Hi, my name is Chippy Dixon. I'm a senior at UTA. And my first decision today is going to be the Department of Attorney. Parsons supports the practical programming methodology designed specifically to develop parallel software. It allows its users to be abstracted from the low-level details of developing multi-threaded software. That is to say that users are not required to know how to develop multi-threading directives or worry about passing data between threads or control the execution of these threads. This saves a lot of software development time and reduces complexity of coding. Parser is made up of graphical objects and art. Graphical objects represent an application task to be performed. Graphical objects are typically, they contain an interface section and a functionality section. The interface section is where we specify the interface that one graphical object will have with another graphical object. And in the functionality section, we specify the input variables that the program will require for execution and the output variables that it will be generating during execution. Parser supports three different kinds of graphical objects, user-defined, co-op, and the like. User-defined graphical objects are used to code straightforward code like functions in C, and the co-op graphical objects provide support for regular parameters, where there's no dependency between each successive iteration of iteration. The co-op graphical object is used for exploiting repeat parallelism, where there could be dependencies between each iteration. Arcs connect the graphical objects together. Arcs represent the data flow within the application between different graphical objects. They basically control the order of execution of the application. Our first experience with Parser was to redo our first assignment given in class to determine the least common string from a set of 45,402 words in a dictionary. And as Jeff described earlier, we were given a code and we were asked to parallelize it using two strings to split the words between them. And in Parser, we implemented it to look something like this. We used the user-defined Go called the input Go. And this allocated the space to the required data structure and read in the required data from the dictionary. It then passed on the dictionary data and other global variables into a four-hour graphical object called the thread-off, where it split the word between two, basically we implemented to do it as two independent loops. which was then done by Farsa's tooth chip. And when we passed out the result into another user-defined graphic logic column, GoTo, which printed out the results. That's just how easy it is to program in Farsa. All we did was, we didn't even have to know that we were using threads. We didn't have to know anything about threads. We just put in the C code that we needed to parallelize, and Farsa did everything for you. As you can see, the performance results here, the hand-coded version and the Farsa implemented version is quite comparable. It's a speed up of about 30 seconds. Also, with the addition of benefits of simplicity in coding. We had to only put in 63 lines of code in the interface and the functionality section of all the three graphical objects in comparison with the 311 lines that we had to put in the hand-coded version. It's also worth noticing how much Farsa does for you. Farsa generated about 558 lines of code given only the 63 lines that we put in. And after learning these basics by our own, we were formally trained by Mr. Marquis, who helped us enhance our understanding about Farsa features and also showed us other ways of implementing Farsa. So basically, essentially, I'd only like to say that Farsa is a very impressive tool to easily build multi-threaded software. Let's just put a script course to continue with the presentation.
Hello, my name is Chris Forrest, and I'll be discussing some research that we actually did during the December 2000 session. As Mr. Marcos had stated, we were actually tasked to work with a CSU graduate who was extremely gifted in Farsa. We were just helping assist generate search applications that utilize MPI design, obtain and analyze timing results from this generated code, and note any potential problems that might discourage automatic MPI code generation. The basic of Kimberly Coffey's thesis was that with Parsa and MPI, you could allow the ability to have distributed code operate across multiple systems. With Parsa, you can actually currently run across SMP systems having multiple processors on the same block. However, that is a distributed domain. With Kenan's theory that he actually stated in the thesis, we had gone through and actually attempted to see if it was possible to reach into that distributed domain. First thing that we wanted to do was actually find some test applications. We just desired to demonstrate two basic types of algorithms. Algorithms that depended on the input data and algorithms that were non-dependent on the data. This was just to show some different values as to how much time actually it would take and also how much the impact MPI would have on such algorithms. The two applications we decided to use, the two algorithms actually, were burst sort and matrix multiplication. With burst sort, it's actually a very good non-oblivious algorithm. There's dependencies based on the inputs, and of course, the loops can have independent of each other. As opposed to matrix multiplication is a good oblivious algorithm, in that loop orders does not need to be reserved, as well as loops themselves can run independent of each other. First algorithm, or first application that we actually created was the merge sort. We designed the merge sort based on the following sections. Actually, we designed merge sort based on the following ideals. First, we would actually have some method of input generation. We would actually create random data into an array. The next section would then take this information, split it into smaller sections, and then work in smaller subsets. Of course, now on a single threaded model, this is not actually appropriate. However, on a pre-threaded model and also on a distributed, this actually would work out. And of course, at the end, we would go through combine the subsections and then go and output your generation of the information. Okay. First application we built on this was actually using single thread. The The single thread was just a normal sequential application, which actually took the information, placed it into an array that was twice the size of the original array, which acted as a partitioning, which would then go through partitioning the information and then combine it at the end. This would allow just for straight merge sort capability. The next section we actually designed was the parsaized version of the merge sorting. First thing that we actually did was to create the separate goes. We went ahead and actually created a go to go through and design all of our generation of data. Our next section was a for all go, which actually would allow multiple threads to run and would actually would likely create smaller sections of data and stored on these. And then, of course, data would then be combined and merged in the while section and presented at the bottom. The next section, the next application that we made was to actually install MPI. Now, with MPI, Cannon's theory was as follows. For every single user-defined go defined in Parsa, it would actually have MPI sends and receives watching for the information. So in the case of using MPI with the parsaized version, at every single section, you would actually have MPI calls. So after the input generation, the information would be sent via MPI over to the next section. The next section would actually then go create threads and work on the appropriate information. After that was completed, the information would then be sent to the combined section, which would go merge the information together, and then eventually go through and then use output. Of course, with MPI, the ability of actually using threads is still possible, so that you still have the benefits of Parso on a SMB system. Now, the results that we obtained we expected the Parse MPI version to be comparable or slower than the version that we had with Parse. One of the reasons being was that when we designed the software, we knew instinctively that all the information or all the data processing was being done sequentially. Therefore, since all information was being done sequentially, there was no room for information, there was no parallel aspects that were being benefited from MPI. So realistically, what was happening is that we were slowing down Parsa to install MPI functionality. For example, we had actually gone through an unlimited set of data sizes from 10,000 to 100,000. We actually had took sample times, and at the end of it, the MPI version with Parsa was slower by about 9 seconds. It's comparable, but on higher data sets, it actually may be different. The next program that we've actually created was based on the matrix multiplication. Now, based on previous knowledge that with MPI and using sequential code, and not using the benefits of the distributed functionality that you would not gain any performance increase, we decided to actually change our code mechanism for flow design just by a little bit. We still have an input generation section. We should actually go through and make our input on arrays A and B, since we're doing multiplication of arrays, or actually of matrices. We also supplied two different workers. These workers would actually work on parts of the matrix itself. For example, if we're using a 500 by 500 array, worker one could work on the first half of the 500 array, the second worker could work on the second half. Now, typically, this could actually be combined in a graphical for all in Parsa. However, we decided to actually split it up in the notion of being able to distribute some of the information to be used on a different system. Of course, eventually we combine the subsections from the workers and then present the data from the other generator. Now, of course, the first version you always make is the sequential version. The which what you actually go through and do on a basic matrix multiplication is actually multiply the rows by the column, do it for every single element, which is, of course, is very slow when using very large matrices. Next version that we made was a little bit more complicated. However, it was done this way to allow for future MPI functionality. The input graphical object that we have actually generates the input and then sends the input to the two different workers. These two workers then work on, as before, work on the array information. One half works on half of the array, the other works on the lower half. And of course, we actually have these workers have the ability of actually installing, using or actually having threads running inside of them. So for example, worker one could actually have four threads running, and worker two would have another set of four threads running, have a collective of eight threads. And then of course this information is eventually combined at the bottom and then presented. Now, the original version, or the first part of the version that we actually use, is of course on an SMT system, just using threads. Using normal threads, there's no need really to actually combine the data. If you're using if we're just passing pointers around, you can actually combine data at the same time. There's no need to separate the information. However, with MPI, since there is no shared memory, you eventually will have to combine the two arrays from both workers. Therefore, that's why the combined is there. It was added, it was kept in the original code just for consistency purposes. Of course, the next version that we decided to create, of course, is the version which incorporated both Parsa and MPI. Now, in the previous slide, we actually had shown two different workers. And of course, actually, we still have the same idea here. What we're allowing with this version that we did not allow in the previous version, or actually in the merge source, was that we now have two worker processes that can be issued or sent, distributed, and where it can be sent on different machines. So for example, if you have, say, two machines that have two processors each, via MPI, you can have worker one work on one machine utilizing two processors. And you can have the second worker working on the other machine utilizing its two processors. And eventually, of course, you'll have to combine the information and then actually obtain the output. The results that we obtained were actually pretty good. Of course, this is always good when you're looking at test applications. When you get some real-world applications, some of these results actually would not be so promising. What we decided to do was actually go through, starting with a 100 by 100 array, and moving up to a 3,000 by 3,000 array, just in increments. What we decided to do, of course, was just to determine how scalable Parsa would be with MPI. The first version that we actually ran, of course, was the sequential version, which is actually the blue line right here. The next version that we actually ran was Parsa on an SMT system with two processors in the machine. Of course, we also got a very nice, compared to the original version, we got a very nice speed up compared to it. The next version that we actually wanted to try was actually using two machines that had two processors inside of them, and actually trying to issue work amongst both machines. And we actually did a very good speed up in doing so. However, getting that speed up, there was a cost. With MPI and with Parsa, and actually allocating a big array, say 3,000 by 3,000, you can run into some memory consumption problems. What we were seeing was that if you actually transfer messages via MPI, allocate three large arrays, and then try to go through and try to free some of these arrays, you run into operating system specific type problems. Problems such as you actually free the memory, but the operating system is not able to reclaim that memory due to the memory is not either contiguous, or that the operating system would rather spend time actually working on code, other processes, than actually trying to reclaim memory. Another problem that we actually also run into is that can be a potential problem in generating automatic code from Parso is passing dynamically allocated structures. The problem with dynamically allocated structures is the fact that a program that has no information, has no prior knowledge as to how big the structure may be. If you do a malloc on a pointer and say, you know, I want 10,000 elements, you can do that, users can do that. However, the program has no indication that the array has actually been sized to 10,000. Unless you go through and add information to inform the program or to inform Parso, then that still would be a problem. The next problem that you also can possibly run into is actually passing structures in heterogeneous environments. For example, one of the biggest problems, of course, is if you've got a Sun machine and a Linux machine running, say, on an Intel box. Big Endian versus little Endian. What will happen if you try to pass information between two operating systems, you have to have a way of actually changing the information. If you do not, then a machine, such as the Sun machine, when interpreting information from an Intel box, will actually have problems obtaining information. Now, NPI itself can actually go through and communicate and actually handle the native data types, such as integers and some floats. However, when adding into a bigger structure, NPI itself, when passed information, has no indication of actually being able to go through and decode the information. Also, there are some special NPI constraints that are problematic. One, for example, is actually the use of exit. If exit is used within inside MPI code, there is actually a potential deadlock case that can happen. If someone's actually waiting for someone to send information, but that process is exited, then your processes will never terminate. Also, there is some special MPI functions that are called the Gogan basic premise of Parso. For example, in order to take care of the exit, there's actually the command MPI abort, which will abort all processes and tell them to exit. If you start adding this information into the Parso, into forals and into goes, what will occur is that you actually are now adding data that is no longer just native C code. That wraps it up for me. Yes.
I had a question, actually two questions.
Okay, go ahead.
One is specific on your first graph, mm-hmm. when you showed the performance of merge sort.
Okay.
Is it possible to pull up that graph? I was trying to understand the result.
Yeah. Okay.
Right there. Mm-hmm. It looks as though Parso alone mm-hmm. had poorer performance than Parso using MPI on that
The Parso by itself actually did a lot better than Parso with MPI.
It did a lot better.
Yeah, Parso did better by, in the largest data set that we did, 10,000 entries. Parso actually, by 9 seconds, beat Parso and MPI. And again, the reason why that happened is that we were not utilizing the full use of MPI.
Right.
We had it all in one system. We were not distributing or offloading anywhere to any other systems. So all it was doing was just adding latency time.
But that overhead seemed to be prevalent mainly when the number of entries was fairly small. As the problem scaled up,
that's also another issue that I apologize for not actually pointing out. That there is, depending if you have a smaller data set, the MPI version will take more time than just a straight Parso. And again, it's just the consistency issues of going through setting up the MPI routine, synchronizing the processes. In the case, for example, if you're in a distributed system, you also have network delays. You could have the system almost not, just never even start if your network's not even working. I've seen it actually take, I've been working on another application that's been taking about 30 to 45 seconds sometimes, depending on the network, just to get the application just loaded. But that's due to, just again, this is basic network consistency problems.
I think that shows up in the matrix multiplication slide, where you can show
Yeah, that's correct. I apologize for not really kind of point that out. But then this slide, actually, MPI, though, the MPI version, in the lower versions, when the lower results, the graph is unfortunately not well-defined enough so you can actually see it. In the lower results, the MPI version still was lower than the normal parser version. However, after your data size became large enough to where the latency issues of MPI were not a big issue anymore, and it was the data set itself that was actually causing all the time, that's when actually MPI started working pretty well. In fact, actually, as I said, it's in the 100 by 100 and 500 by 500 case where MPI was slower than the original version. Past it, we actually from 500 to next test, we tried to set 1,000 by 1,000. In that case, the MPI version actually was a lot better than the parser version. And if it's something, if there's any, committing exact times or any, how was it done, I can give that offline or it comes in the report. Yes.
The parser MPI version had twice as many processors as the standard parser version to run on?
Right. What we were trying to actually test for this was actually scalability.
Okay.
In the previous version, with the merge sort, if we had four processors, eight processors, distributed system, if we're actually doing the merge sort and we had two boxes that had two processors each, the results would actually not increase because of the fact that you're only allowing one machine at one point in time to do the work. However, in this case, what we're trying to say, okay, we've got two machines, we want to actually offload the work, can we actually get, the speed up almost comparable to if we had four processors on the same box?
At least here we didn't get a linear speed up when we doubled the processors on it with the MPI version.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's due to
the
communication.
Yeah.
I have one other question for anybody in the group, and that is, after having worked with Parsa this summer, is there one functionality that you would add to the system? What one thing do you think it would benefit most from adding?
Well, I'm almost thinking in distributed itself would actually be nice, being able to actually have a distributed system. There's still a lot of work that probably needs to be done to implement MPI with Parsa. I'm really thinking this would be actually a very good idea. There's a lot of things you can actually do with it. However, it's just depending on if we can take care of some of the other issues that can make it so that MPI and pthread are hidden to the end user. Can they write code that will allow them to do that? Yes.
Did you attempt to solve the big Indian, little Indian problem?
That I did not. There is actually, I do know, did a little bit of research, there is some functions inside of MPI itself which allow you to specify a structure. You have the ability to actually handwriting or informing MPI of structure types. Once you inform, I believe, MPI of these structure types, you can pass them, and I believe MPI can then do the conversion. I believe that to be the case. However, I haven't actually gone through and researched it.
Do you know if that's similar to XDR? Do you agree with XDR encoding?
No.
XDR is what Sun developer uses for PC. It's okay. A pretty nice job. It flows your structures right through the C1.
Right. There's always one case that you can do, and that is actually write wrapper routines that actually go through and take a structure and send it one element at a time. So there's always a way I think to do things. It's just, depending on if it's fast enough, and are you willing to take the time and the patience to actually code it.
The XDR does that, but it does send the packet at a time, not an element. It's the whole structure.
Okay.
You can end up sending gigabytes if you have to do it.
Any final questions? Well,
I'm Diane Cook, by the way, and I want to mention that Chris and Kashisi and Jeff, all of them presented the course that they took and Parsa and the project. All three of them did all of these things. They all took the course, they all became community Parsa, and they all worked on the project. And these are undergraduate students. They hadn't had a background in parallel processing. This is the first course, and they learn all this in 2 weeks. They did a project that. Also, in summary, if you're interested in any of the specifics on the project that they investigated this summer, a full report will be put together and available on the REU homepage, which is cygnus.edu/REU.
Question?
Yes.
When will you be taking applications for any remaining positions?
My next point, yes. This program will continue again the next few years, and we would encourage you to apply to the program if you're students and undergraduates, or if you know some undergraduate students. We'll be taking applications by next spring. I believe the deadline is first week of April. The application form is available on the REU homepage. You can talk to the students this year to see how they enjoyed the program and criteria for allowing for students into the REU program development. So, once again, thank you all for coming today. Thank you to the TCU visitors and faculty. And if you have any other questions, please hang on afterwards and ask myself or Dr.